much, Lisa. Hello, everybody. Oh, it's so nice to see all of you. And, yeah, I am an adult child. I come from a dysfunctional family. And it's a real privilege, like massive and honour, to have been asked to come and share here. I haven't been to the States in recovery yet, and I have listened to many, many speaker tapes from there, and thought, yeah, I'm going to really avail myself the best if I go to America, because that's where recovery's at. And, you know, as Lisa already said, this is one of the blessings of COVID, because as soon as meetings went to Zoom, I just went, oh my goodness, how brilliant is that? I can go, well, all over the world, but America, particularly California, is where I wanted to head. This thing. And so the fact that I am here with you right now, and I'm able to regularly come to meetings with you guys is just absolutely wonderful. And I look forward to meeting you face to face, like imagine, in the flesh, one day, hopefully not too soon. So, I'm just going to breathe in through my nose, because I'm a little bit excited, but excitement for me feels very similar to anxiety as well. So, it's both. And that's okay. I'm exactly as I'm supposed to be, right here, right now. And, as I said, I'm Lucy, and I was born in Wales, and I live in Sydney, Australia, and I'm with you in the States. So there's a little bit more of dysfunction. Well, no, it's not actually. It's just beautiful recovery. And I have been clean and sober for 12 and a half years. I am, an alcoholic addict and food addict. And, most definitely an adult child. So I was asked to share my life story with you, and that's what I'm going to try to do. So I was born the second child of two. I have an older brother who has hated me ever since I was born. The fact that I was born was enough to do that. And we were born into, to a mum and a dad who were middle class, really wished they were upper class. And they're not really big drinkers. And my mum wanted two children, and she wanted a boy and a girl in that order, and that's what she got. And I think, it was about her and what she wanted as opposed to the kids and what we might need. So I was insecure, fearful, sensitive, shy, and needed lots of encouragement and reassurance. And I think in my home, my emotional needs weren't met. And I see how that bundle of family dysfunction was just passed down from generation to generation. And my parents, they just didn't know any better. And that's not an excuse. So my dad, just to give you an idea, he's most definitely an APA. Neither of my parents would ever admit to you that there was anything ever wrong. However, my observations are of him being a broken 8-year-old little boy who had stones thrown at him and nobody to go and tell. and who was obsessed by the war and aeroplanes, and enables my mum, who is she came from London in the Blitz, and I think that her household was where the boys, she has two brothers, they were the dominant and the focus of the family, and women were just housewives. And so she's had this really big thing about prestige and proving men wrong and a need to be better than others. And so, yeah, their history is their history, but obviously those things were passed down. And I experienced my mum to be restless, irritable, and discontent. But I internalized that, thinking it was my fault. As a kid, who was just desperate for mum's approval. And I, in my house, so it wasn't safe for me to talk about what was really going on. I learned the don't talk, don't trust, and don't feel of ACA from a young age. I was told, we don't talk about those sorts of things, if it was anything personal. And keeping up appearances and what the neighbors thought was the name of the game. Under the guise of, you know, the illusion of perfectionism. So I got the message that I wasn't enough. And, from the outside, we looked like this lovely, happy family. And I didn't want for anything materially. But emotionally, I didn't get the nurture and my needs met. In the family, it was, communication wasn't great. Shouting and screaming was generally the currency, and door slamming as I grew up. And my experience of things with my parents is when if I needed a lift somewhere or for them to do something to help me, there would be sighing and eye rolling and behaviors, signs and signals and tone, which I'm very sensitive to all of those, but they gave me the message that I was an inconvenience. If I had any needs or wants, then I was really an inconvenience. So it's the wrong time. And so I found that confusing, and I felt alone from a young age. And I didn't build connections with people, so I didn't have anywhere to turn, really. I loved the look of other people's families, and when I went there, I wanted to be part of them. I could see things were different, but as a kid, my mum and dad were my higher power, and I didn't know any different. And so I developed manipulative behaviors. You know, I wanted to people please. I was seeking approval and validation externally. And I know that, those are codependency traits now. I've learned a lot since I came into recovery. And I think I learned to self-medicate and self-soothe with sugar from a really young age. That was something that was accessible, and I spent all my pocket money on it and would just eat the sachets or sugar cubes at other times. And if ever I did express my feelings or emotions, then I would be told, don't be so ridiculous. Like, whatever I said, it wouldn't be validated, and in fact, I would be told something to the contrary. So, that was confusing as well. I learned that the approval and so-called love in my family was something that was conditional. It wasn't unconditional. which is what I know love to be now, and that I've had the blessing to experience with people that I've come across during my recovery journey. And so as I grew up into a teenager, my friends were never good enough. There was lots of criticism, and my defense was to act like I didn't care, or shout and mirror the behavior I think I was shown. I learned to be a chameleon who would adapt to the environment that I was in, but didn't really get close to anyone in particular. And I think from about the age of 13, it started to become apparent externally that there was something not right for me. And my dad's line that was just, I heard over and over, was, "You've gone downhill ever since the age of 13. And I think that was when I started to actually, make noise about things not being okay for me. And, but the thought of ever seeking help or talking to anyone outside of the house was absolutely it would never have been an option. And in fact, talking about things in the house wasn't an option either, because it was a case of just sticking a head in the sand, pretending that everything's fine, sitting down for a meal. And so I can see that I started to shut down, and my anger and met needs was turned inwards. My brother was very outwardly vocal and smashing things in the house, whereas I would turn that inwards. And I found mealtimes in particular were really difficult. The tension at the dinner table, the uncomfortability, the criticism, the hostility, the drama, and shaming was very, very uncomfortable. And I developed a eating disorder at the age of 17, and I believe that is through learning to stuff my feelings as opposed to being able to feel my stuff, learning how to do that. And it's a horrific disease that is so secretive and shameful. I was told, don't ever darken our doorstep with your problems. And if I did try and confide in a parent, one of my parents, it would be used against me at some point. And I would be embarrassed or feel humiliated. And I didn't see the making of healthy choices modeled either. So nothing was addressed, nothing was worked through or reasoned out or explained, and I was just left confused and unsure and self-doubting. I picked up a drink at about 14 or 15, and it changed the way I felt. I didn't like the taste, but I loved the effect, because I got confident and carefree, and it changed. But I was a really rubbish drinker, and so drugs came into my story quite early on, because they enabled me to drink more and stay together better, and again changed the way that I felt. I got jobs in the bar and waitressing industry where I could get paid, to be drinking and drugging, really. So I thought that was really clever. In my first one of those jobs, I met somebody who was seriously bad news for me. Got into a 15-year relationship that was just so traumatic and abusive. He was very handsome, looked like Action Man, had the swagger, the charisma, that I thought was my everything. because I bought into, you know, the externals, and I objectified him, I realise now. And, you know, there were horrific goings on there. I was thrown down the stairs naked one Christmas day in Wales in the middle of winter, and then naked, and then all my belongings came out the first floor window onto the street, and I didn't have anywhere else to go as far as I knew, so I went back, and that was, you know, within the first few couple of years. But an example is the sort of thing, because I, you know, yeah, I would rather have gone back to that, I suppose, that fantasy, than the judgment of my family. So, yeah, I think I did my first geographical when I went to university, and which was as far away as possible from my parents, and I had to write to them each month to ask for the money to live off. I didn't qualify for a grant, but it was made very clear that the message I got was, you owe us. You owe us, and I am your father, you will respect me. And it just, well, didn't sit well for me, and drugs became a constant. That was just something, you know, that I could use to not feel. And again, the bulimia would be horrific, like 10 to 12 times a day. Whenever I'd had interaction with my parents or been to visit them. And so I was just checking out whilst going in and out of this destructive relationship with my ex, and who threatened me and stalked me, and it was just so sad, and just this cycle of abuse and violence that I couldn't get out of. I hadn't learned how to leave until recovery, and it's really miraculous. You know, I can see throughout my life how my higher power has been present, and I'm here, and that I've been taken care of, because I was able to, goodness knows how, decide to come to Australia as far away as possible. It had never been on my plan. I was desperate. I was at rock bottom, and I needed to get away from him, who'd started doing heroin, and I knew if I did that, then that would give me everything I wanted, which was to feel nothing, and there wouldn't be a way back. And also I couldn't keep up the appearance and keep re-engaging with my family. So those two things gave me the what I needed to decide to go to Australia with a bag of bikinis and no plan, just 2 days before Christmas, so I didn't have another Christmas in the UK. It all made perfect sense to me, and I was going to the land of sunshine and home and away and neighbours with no plan, thinking, yeah, that's gonna be the solution. And you could smoke on the plane then, so I smoke and drank my way over to Australia, but as you can probably guess, I brought myself with me and my head, and my family in my head. And so I know that addiction and my behaviours, things progress. It's a progressive disease, and I tried lots of different ways to try to manage and chop and change, and go to different doctors, and I was seeking solutions, but I was just not where I needed them. And maybe it was because I couldn't admit things to myself. My denial was so strong. And in the last 6 months of my drinking and using, things just got worse and worse and worse. I went to one of these workshop things where my life was going to be changed, and I got thrown off on the second day, and they told me that this isn't going to work for you. We can't help you here. And I got arrested, and things just were really, really awful. But that got me into rehab. That got me into rehab, where I'd convinced myself I was going to a health farm detox as opposed to a psychiatric hospital. And there, the cycle was broken for the first time. And I felt I had a chance. I had a chance, you know, that cycle was broken. And I had the most wonderful 3 weeks. In fact, I have photograph albums of my time in rehab. It was that good. And I got introduced to 12-step recovery there. And there was something that I wanted. You know, there was a solution presented to me. And so I haven't had a drink or drug since then, thankfully. And I threw myself into AA and had to learn how to not go to meetings because I was too terrified. You know, utter terror, less than meditated. I was a gibbering, shaking wreck, like a little rabbit in the headlights. And however, I pray for courage in the Serenity Prayer a little bit louder than everything else. And I'm courageous. And I've been able to take steps forward. Tiny, tiny little ones sometimes, but walk towards the light, away from the dark. And I arrived, you know, I have the gift of desperation, willing to go to any length and to do whatever I needed to. And I could, it felt like a curse, but I can see how that stood me in good stead, because I'm here. I'm still here, and my recovery goes on. And it does take time. You know, I've always wanted a quick fix for things. And, it doesn't happen like that. And I've had to learn how to live unmedicated. By drugs and alcohol, and smoking was taken from me, you know, things that were out of alignment with saving my life just didn't fit anymore. And I've experienced such kindness and time. I think the biggest gift that people can give is their time, and I've been really blessed. And I couldn't connect with women initially, but through getting into food recovery, FA, when I was 2.5 years sober, that's when I learned about the making beautiful connections with loving women, and my heart started soaring. At 5 years, I re-engaged with my family after learning to detach, and saw my ex for the first time, because I hadn't seen him sober, and when he gave me a hug, he broke my rib. And I believe that was my higher power doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, because I needed that. You know, the emotional, mental pain that I'd had, you know, the physical pain of the breaking and hearing it and feeling it was nothing. I knew that that would heal. But the emotional damage on top of, you know, where I'd come from was a whole different story. And that's something that I'm, you know, in the process of healing from still. And I knew that I identified with ACA. I was an adult child in Sydney. The fellowship was here. And then it kind of petered out. And over the past 5 years, it has started up again, which is wonderful, and I'm fully involved in that. I knew I needed it a long time before, and the speaker tapes of Bob Earl from your neck of the woods, he's been a lifesaver of mine ever since I got sober. If you haven't listened to him, he's a legend. I don't know. I'm just stopping to question myself right now, and so I'll just take a sip of water. And I'll keep going. So in ACA, I listened to the Big Red Book. I had that on audiobook before the meetings in Sydney were up and going again, and identified so much. I love the idea of reparenting, and I knew that there was a lot of grieving still that I needed to do, and that's the process. That's the process. And what I've learned about grieving as well is that when I want change to happen and I do the work by taking action, then change happens, but there's grief that goes with that. So it's I don't feel comfortable in it, but I just learn to, what is that? I don't get to feel better, I get better at feeling. That resonates with me. Healing from my childhood wounds and trauma as well is all part. I engaged in lots of therapy, and I'll do anything that could possibly support my recovery. I always wanted one sponsor forever, you know, and this happy ever after, and that's not been my experience. I've walked with a number of different people, and I've been through the steps in different fellowships in different ways. A fair few times. And that brings me to, my current sponsor now, who I reached out to while in the fetal position at a rock bottom again, an emotional rock bottom, because I needed more. I needed that second stage recovery that ACA offers, and I needed it I think I had so many needs. And I reached out to someone, a spiritual warrior I'd walked with in a group study 10 years before, and asked them if they knew anyone, and they guided me to my sponsor now, and who has given me so much time and love and kindness. An example, they asked me, you know, or told me, I don't know, asked me, told me, it depends on what day you asked me, I guess, but basically, it was suggested, and we talked enough, so that I'd be willing to take actions I didn't yet understand, and to just trust the process, just trust, and not need to know all the answers, and don't second guess, and that's something I need to remind myself of often. The words of Ram Dass, be here now, very helpful, because I would live in the past very often and get depressed or project into the future and feel anxious. And actually, I'm able to be present a lot more of the time these days and be here now. Having a little look around the screen at your faces and seeing some smiles, which is ever so, it means a lot. You know, it's the little things are the big things. And often, you know, things are not how I want them to be, and I'm reminded of my powerlessness, I'm taken back to the steps, you know, guide my sponsor works with me, and God bless them, I drive myself completely crazy. In fact, I'm the one, you know, the only thing that gets in my way in recovery is me. And they're always loving and kind and have lots of wisdom and experience that they share with me. So I have learned that I need to treat myself well in order to teach other people how to treat me, which I didn't know. And I used all of the tools of the program. I think that they're brilliant, and the simplicity is wonderful. But for me, it's practice. I don't actually, I want to do something once and then not have to do it again. But, it's action. And I've learned that my job is to do the work, to do the step work, to put in that footwork and leave the results up to my higher power that I don't understand, but I have more experience of and an evolving concept, and my open-mindedness allows for that to grow and change as I do. So I work the steps, and I'm doing what I need to do to heal. And I keep doing it because my mind will go, it's not working. I need to be doing something different, or I'm not doing it right. And actually, that's just old tape, the old narrative of the inner critic that just wants to absolutely smash me to pieces. And so I'm learning to reparent myself and practice self-love and self-care. And I feel pain. I feel my feelings and better, and I know more that I'm not alone. I have more trusted, beautiful people that I can pick up the phone to, and they get it. And I'm there for lots of other people too. So it's really beautiful, but there's none of that conditional nature or the owing of the past. I've learned to have more compassion for my parents, for my family of origin, and forgiveness. It's about 10 months since I detached, and went no contact with them, which was absolutely terrifying, but, has helped my recovery so much. And ACA is about keeping the focus on me. Me, and in Al-Anon I learned me first, me second, me third, and I will still forget because my default was to just look after everybody else and give. I'm responsible for me and my recovery, and in the step work that I did most recently, I wrote out a list of what my higher power is in step two and what my higher power isn't, and a bit of my understanding, and then actually ripped up the list of what my higher power isn't and chucked it away. And I need to get the list out actually and stick it on the wall by my bed, because I can forget very easily, especially good things. And I know that. And so far, I mean, my mind will tell me I've just been talking. Well, of course I've been talking. Anyway, that's another conversation for another time that I'll probably have with my mind. I've learned that I have needs and wants, and I'm getting better at identifying them and meeting those needs. I attend lots of meetings, and I am seen, which can feel really challenging sometimes, because my trauma response was to freeze and to dissociate and hide. And but I come to meetings and speak my truth and move from isolation to connection, which is what I want. And I'm able to carry the message, my message, by the actions that I take, and by being me and not having to try to just adopt all these bits of other people that I thought I should be. And I'm perfectly imperfect, just as I am, and right in this moment, I'm able to accept that. I'm okay with that. I find meditation really helpful. I couldn't didn't have no idea what the word even meant when I came into recovery. However, having awareness and consciousness of breathing, just taking a breath, you know, a deep inhale through my nose, belly breathing, which helps to just calm my nervous system. What a revelation, how radical. And I can do that anytime, anywhere. There's so much stuff, you know, and I've explored guided meditation, DMs, and I'm particularly enjoying inner child and loving parent meditations, and there's so much stuff out there at the moment. Lisa, can I just have a time check? I don't know. I think that's 35 minutes I've talked for, I think.
You know, I wasn't timing it, but it's 5 minutes before the top of the hour here. So you have been talking, let's see, does anybody know how long?
35 minutes.
Yeah, I timed myself.
Okay, very good.
So another 5 minutes or...
Sure, you know, you're doing so well. Just keep going.
Aw, thanks. I'm going to give myself a hug. Thank you. feel free to hug yourself from me to you. How lovely. And I'm actually really enjoying myself. I want to talk about literature. That's a tool that I use, and that's listening to, reading, and I love daily readings. In fact, one of them today was on carrying the message on step 12, one of the readings that I did, and I carried that with me into being here right now. I use the telephone, and for me, I find that actually making calls is better than text messaging, because being me, I can hide behind text messages, and so I learned to pick up the phone, even if I had no idea what to say, and ask someone else how they were. So that's a tool that I use each day. Being of service is a really, really lovely thing to do. I've always done service, and at the moment I am the secretary of the new Sunday Serenity meeting in Santa Maria, which is part of the Healing Fellowship, the ACA Healing Fellowship. So, you're all welcome. Which is my tomorrow, because I'm always in the future, and it's your Sunday afternoon. In the future, Australia-wise, I like to think that I'm in the present when I'm at the meeting, but some days yes, and some days perhaps not. I have started several meetings over here. I think that, because like I said, I've struggled with food, I started a ACA food and emotions meeting here in Australia during COVID, and that's going really well and has helped my recovery no end. Also, it was necessary to have a women's meeting here to create a safe space for women to get together, and that's going well also. So there's different things. You know, I've been involved in workshops and doing something like this, speaking and telling my story, and helping others. There's so many different ways to be of service, and it's, it helps me feel good as well as helping somebody else. I am practicing becoming my own cheerleader, which I always wanted somebody else to do. I was always looking for my personal cheerleader, as with everything outside of myself, and you know, that's never gonna work, and it didn't work, and recovery taught me I need to go within go within or I go without. And I'm able to do that better. I hang out with little Lucy, my inner child, and have play dates, and she enjoys fun times. And Anna is the one who gets triggered or reacts, you know, and gets frightened. And so I'm learning to navigate through better there and build relationships. I love the ACA Bill of Rights. Look, there's so many promises that have come true and are coming true more and more. It's progressive, and I love the fact that I'm able to let go of those survival traits that don't serve me anymore. And discovering who I really am. And I'm
800 hours.
Oh, there we go. That was my clock telling me. And I think I'll leave it there. And continue to expect the best and get it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.